Welcome to ATS Mix.
And I think until you start asking questions, you know, you're just going to buy whatever's offered to you on the 6 o'clock news.
ATS Mix.
This isn't a talk show, it's a freak show.
From AboveTopSecret.com.
But also be skeptical of the people who are out there selling conspiracy theories.
The Internet's most popular conspiracy theory discussion board. ATS Mix from AboveTopSecret.com.
In the name of Christ, just let us in!
Starts now.
It is the ATS Mix Show. And that means that I am Johnny Anonymous.
And I'm his partner, Dave Rabbit. And we want to, I guess, start show 101 by saying, John, how much we greatly appreciate all the contributors and all the well-wishers for our most recent milestone of 100 ATS Mix shows here at AboveTopSecret.com. And you, John, I've got to, again, thank you for just hours upon hours upon hours of going through the dusty attic and digging out some of the classic stuff that the members got to listen to on last week's show.
You know, a lot of that, even though there was a lot of effort that went into finding those particular episodes and those little snippets that we threw in there, I got to tell you, I laughed my butt off, Dave, as I was listening to those.
Yeah, I did too. And, you know, some of them, of course, you know, we had, you and I had, since we did them, obviously we had heard them because we did them live, even though they ended up in the trash can. But hearing some of those things, I mean, really, I hearken back to our infancy days, our toddler days, if you will, to where we were really trying to figure things out and whatever. And, you know, I mean, I think, you know, over the last several months, John, and damn me all to hell and back. You know, I've become this kinder, gentler Dave. It just really chaps my ass. And, you know, I want to get a 2x4 and just beat the crap out of myself. I mean, you know, we go from what's Dave going to say next, and now, hell, I'm posting crap on the site, and people are actually thinking I'm a human being. What the hell's the deal with this, John?
And you know what? I don't think that's a bad thing. In fact, I think it's a godsend or an entity sin or whatever belief system you have, they may be responsible for it because especially with some of those fine articles and posts that you've made up in the ATS Mix, which included you talking about your spirituality and your belief systems, and you ended up getting, 270 some odd responses on that one, I think, if not more. Yeah. And then you came right back with another one of why you believed that life has to exist outside of our earthly realm. And right. There again, you got a lot of people to respond to it. Yeah. And so contrary to popular belief or even Dave Rabbit belief, there are people that do enjoy the more serious side of Dave Rabbit, I believe.
Well, you know what's really funny? And I mean, I guess I want, you know, the first one where I really fessed up about my religious beliefs and being agnostic and, you know, wanting to have a belief in something or faith in something. You know, I mean, I was so overwhelmed by the response, I thought, you know, well, you know, was this a fluke or, you know, maybe do I really have a sincere knack for posting something that maybe stirs the inner soul of people and get them to participate? And then, of course, the universe thing, you know, are we alone in the universe? Intelligent discussion. Well, my God, you know, I mean, that's been up a little bit less than a week with 216 people that's already, you know, replied to it.
Right.
So that blew me away. And then, of course, this week, you know, I decided, you know, well, you know, I'm going to see if I can really push the envelope here. And I came up with two more. One is, what's your bucket list? And you're familiar with that, right, John, what the bucket list is, right? You know, what you would want to do, goals in your life that you maybe not have accomplished yet, that you'd like to accomplish it before you die or, quote-unquote, kick the bucket. Well, I mean, in just a couple of days, it's got 117 replies. But I tell you what really blows me away, John. You know, I mean, completely wipes out all the others, I think, except for the religious one. I think that the religious one has over 300 now or something. But the one that really blows me away is, what's your top movie in each genre that I started just a couple of days ago? 300 replies, you know, of people. And I guess everybody that enjoys the ATS Mix show and semi-enjoys my occasional sidebar or two, really loves this one because this thing has gone so many sidebars. We're in directors, we're in producers, best actress, actor, that kind of thing. But you know what? I think it just goes to show that the community really loves a little distraction, you know, John. And that's what we do here at the ATS Mix. We try to give them a little distraction. And, you know, we try to give them their oatmeal and give them some honey along with it, right?
Well, you know, I looked up in the dictionary under the word distraction, and they had a photograph of you.
Yeah, well, speaking of distraction, I can't say it, but speaking of that, I want to take this opportunity to mention a very special person that we got to meet at the 2008 Bay Area UFO Expo. We first met her husband, John Alexander, who we are going to do a show with somewhere down the way as quick as we can get our schedule aligned with his. But we also met his beautiful wife, Victoria Alexander. Now, the reason why I want to give special thanks and shout out to Victoria, she is a movie critic for RottenTomatoes.com. I'm sure those of you that know anything about websites, RottenTomatoes.com is really renowned for people just saying how it is and without the mainstream media hands-tied mentality. And Victoria does a marvelous job there. She not only reviews movies, but she has, you know, she has different columns and different viewpoints. One is viewpoint on Vegas, where she talks about the Vegas community and et cetera. And you need to check her out. And that's it, as I say, RottenTomatoes.com, www, of course. Anyway, John and I are talking today about this particular show. And he says to me, Dave, did Victoria send you, forward you the thing that she put on RottenTomatoes.com? And I said, no, John, I guess, you know, it got hung up in my spam mail or whatever. He said, well, just a second. He says, I'm going to send it to you. So he sends me an email that she sent to both of us. And this was from October 15th. So that was just yesterday. That's when you sent it. When did she send it to you, John? Do you remember?
Yesterday.
Oh, so it now came out then?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, good. All right. And so Johnny says, okay,
and by the way, this isn't just in a, I don't know if it primarily showed up in a RottenTomatoes.com for any of our listeners that suddenly decide they want to go find it. But there are several articles and blogs that she writes for, and I think she included them in all of those.
Right. So we got a pretty good display, if you will, a potpourri. There's several members that just love that word, John. Please, no more U2Us. I promise this will be the last time I'll say potpourri. But, you know, she talks about the 10th Annual Bay Area UFO Expo and some of the speakers there, David Icke. She talks about Coast to Coast, with George Knapp and, you know, just different things. And John,
oh, please, I hope you're going to read it verbatim.
I'm going to try to get
through
it. So John says, okay, scroll down, Dave. And I'm scrolling. And he says, oh. And then here's a picture on this blog or whatever she's got posted in all these different places. And it's a picture of last year. I think this was last year because you had your Martin the Martian T-shirt on, John.
Yeah.
But it's a picture of me and John standing there. And it says above, top secret. Now, I'm going to read this verbatim. It's not a long read, but I want everybody to pay attention to this because this is honest to God true story. And I guess it's just kind of go. And this was John's validation about me. Above, top secret, it says. I thoroughly enjoyed spending time with Dave Rabbit, pictured left, and Johnny Anonymous, pictured right, of AboveTopSecret.com. This rambunctious duo gleefully cover all the strangest swirling out there. AboveTopSecret.com is the place to go for the absolute strange. Now, this is the part that Johnny just couldn't wait for me to read. Dave described their radio partnership to me. Johnny, he proudly said, is the consummate researcher. He studies the topic under discussion. Dave doesn't bother even paying attention. That's his job and his charm. After being introduced to me, spending a half hour talking to me, and looking at my business card for the complete half hour, he asked me, so, how are you affiliated with John Alexander? Sitting with them was like trying to make two toddlers behave at a funeral. I offered Dave crayons and paper in an attempt to settle him down. And then, of course, she gives the shortcuts to AboveTopSecret.com and that kind of stuff. I'll never forget this, John, because literally, I mean, we're sitting there at the AboveTopSecret.com table at the Bay Area UFO Expo.
Right.
And I did. I looked at her card. And, you know, and I mean, I had John's card. It said John Alexander. And I looked at her card. It says Victoria Alexander. But, you know, I don't know why. I'm listening to her talk, and we're kind of watching people come by and give us thumbs up or whatever. So I am distracted, and I'm not really paying attention. And she and I are having this long conversation, and we're talking about RottenTomatoes.com and all this other stuff. And I do. And Johnny is just about ready to come unglued when I say this because he's thinking, damn, Dave. You know, she was introduced to us as John's wife, and you completely missed that little tidbit of information. And I do. I simply asked and said, well, tell me how you're affiliated with John, you know, because I thought maybe she was a groupie or something, you know, and all this other stuff had completely gone over my head. So anyway, I got to say, Victoria, this article really blew me away, and I profusely apologize at the time, and I profusely apologize again that somehow or other, in all the 19 different attempts you told me that you were his wife, they escaped me each and every time to ask you such a stupid question.
Dave does promise that he'll send those little artistic drawings that he drew with the crayons to you.
Yeah, they're being put up at, you know, Taco Bell as we speak.
Denny's.
Halloween edition, yeah. But anyway, seriously, I just wanted to give a shout-out to Victoria Alexander, and please encourage everybody to go to RottenTomatoes.com and look up some of the things that Victoria does. Or I'm sure you could probably Google Victoria Alexander. But, you know, all kidding aside, she was just absolutely a joy to talk to, absolutely drop-dead gorgeous woman, and John is very lucky to have such a beautiful and intelligent wife and partner in life. So kudos to you, Victoria, and sorry I didn't quite get the picture.
Yeah, but he'll be sending you a few pictures drawn in colored wax.
Yeah, really.
We've got a chance to really meet a lot of great people up there at the expo, and I just want to again reiterate how much we appreciate our good friend Rob Mitchell, who handles all the audio video production. He's been doing this for years and years and years, and he actually let Dave Springer and myself, along with George Knapp, go into a private conference room and use a big screen so that George Knapp could be exposed to some of the high strangeness that we experienced at James Gilliland's ranch up there below Mount Adams. In fact, you know, speaking of George Knapp, I was listening to, although this has nothing to do with George Knapp, I was listening to Coast to Coast, which George Knapp was on, and he mentioned us, of course, what was it, about a week and a half ago, about running into us and having so much fun with us, and he heard the strangeness. So I'm listening to Coast again last night, and guess who I hear on the radio, Dave?
I bite. You're the studious one. Who was it, John?
Jim Mars.
You're Jim? Are Jim Mars?
Well,
our conspiracy master, whatever that entity is, that Jim Mars?
Jim Mars is on Coast to Coast. George Norrie is interviewing him. And at one point, he asked Jim, you know, so what have you been up to? What have you been doing? And so he starts talking about this book that he's written. And as I start listening a little bit more intently, he tells the name of this book that's going to be released, I guess, next month. And guess what the name of the book is?
I don't know. What is it?
Above Top Secret.
Really?
Yes.
Now, is that the book that he's been working on, talking about topics and things that are on our beloved home page of AboveTopSecret.com?
Ding, ding, ding. You would be correct.
I love that guy. Is any kin to Victoria Alexander?
Doubtful. But anyway, I had heard rumors about a book that ATS had been involved with Jim Mars, but I did not know exactly when it was going to be released. So now you, our mighty fans and listeners, now have the scoop right along with Dave and I. Apparently, next month, there is going to be the release from best-selling author Jim Mars, and the name of the book is Above Top Secret, and it apparently covers, you know, just about all the crazy conspiracies that you could think of. And right. Of course, I haven't seen or read the book, so I don't know yet, but I would assume that Jim is going to give his two cents about it.
Right.
You would think, right?
Yeah, and the amazing thing for a lot of the members out there is that articles that he's going to be addressing in the book, or so I, as I understand, are articles that our own members at AboveTopSecret.com came up with or created initially. And so even though they probably are not going to have their name mentioned, their AboveTopSecret.com member name mentioned, still they'll have the pride in that he's talking about in this nationally publicized book something that they created. So, I mean, I think there's a lot of wow factor just in that alone, John.
If there wasn't a added incentive there for our members and listeners alike to continue at AboveTopSecret.com posting quality threads, if you look what happened. These quality threads were now included in this book that Jim Mars wrote. So kudos to you members and listeners, and keep posting those quality threads.
And speaking of quality threads, John, do you realize that there was one thread that I believe was the catalyst, if you will, for us setting all kinds of records this past week? I know in our cosmic community, was a flurry of activity because of the absolute mind-numbing amount of posts on one particular thread. John, do you have information about that?
Unless you are referring to the October 14th debacle, I don't know what you're speaking of. Is that what
you're
talking about?
That's exactly where I'm going, baby buddy.
All right. Well, for those that don't know, there is a... In fact, I don't know what her actual title is, but she is supposedly a channeler. She's a psychic medium also. I don't know. But she supposedly channeled many, many weeks ago a message that came to her in her head from, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe it's the Galactic Federation of Light. Is that, does that ring a bell? Yeah, all right.
Yeah, GFL.
Mm-hmm. Right, Galactic Federation of Light. And supposedly they channeled through her a message saying that there was going to be an enormous UFO sighting somewhere in the world. And the key word that was given to her was the word, if I recall correctly, Alabama. Now, Alabama in a number of different languages means different things. So it might not have necessarily been like the state of Alabama in the United States. I've read different bits of information concerning this supposed UFO where it was supposed to be a couple of miles long, 200 miles long, 2,000 miles long. I've heard several different bits of information as to the size of this.
Almost like Independence Day.
Exactly. Right. And it actually created a flurry, as Dave said, and we ended up getting some record days at AboveTopSecret.com because of what this channeler... Oh, by the way, I guess we should mention her name. Her name is Blossom Goodchild, and I believe she's from the UK. And she's written books prior, but she claims she hasn't really made any money from them because of the information she shared publicly. In fact, there were just numerous YouTube videos about it, numerous posts and threads at all the different forums that deal with conspiracies and UFO-related information, that we had to kind of take control of it and said, okay, there are way too many threads and posts about this. We've got to kind of put the stops on this and let people just keep posting in some of the original threads rather than have 100 different threads on the same subject. Is that not what you kind of thought we were?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, here again, you know, you have to understand that, you know, Johnny and I are moderators. I guess it's kind of like salad dressing, John. I mean, you know, you have the full-bodied ranch dressing, you know, where it has all the fat and all the good stuff in it. And then you have, you know, the ranch dressing light. So Johnny and I are kind of, for salad lovers, we're kind of like the light dressing. But still, I mean, even though we have moderator powers, we don't have the huge workload of reading every single thing that's posted. Unlike our sisters and brother moderators of the Mod Squad that have that auspicious authority and have that responsibility thrown in their laps. And I'm telling you, Cosmic was a flurry of activity, you know, on that particular day, especially the day before all this stuff was magically going to happen. So, wow, I can't even imagine. I saw a post, John, I'm sure you did too, in Cosmic, where the moderators were literally 10-hour days, 12-hour days, whatever, just absolutely worn out from all the chaotic frenzy that took place.
And the bottom line to all this is nothing happened. Nothing,
yep.
Nothing happened. There was no large 2-mile, 200-mile, or 2,000-mile UFO that showed up. So then what I happened to catch today is that there is a message that Blossom Goodchild has now posted on YouTube, not necessarily apologizing, although I guess that's what it really boils down to, for them not showing up. And she says, and I'm paraphrasing here, these are not her words, but, you know, I'm sorry, I don't know what happened, I feel like I have egg on my face, why it did not happen, I don't know, there are people that say that I hoaxed the whole thing, why would I hoax something like this to create such controversy and demean my own name and or her own good name, I think is how she referred it to. Regardless, nothing happened. We're still all here. Right. No big UFO sighting. But that was a huge, huge record couple of days. You could definitely see how people kind of got wrapped up into the hysteria part of it. And
speaking of hysteria, John, I want to mention a couple of numbers.
Sure.
For you. Now, keep in mind that AboveTopSecret.com is, well into going on to our 11th year. We've already surpassed our 10-year anniversary and going into our 11th year. So, I mean, when you stop and consider these numbers, I mean, this really kind of blew me away. And, I mean, if you ever want to know what the numbers are for the site, if you go to the board home at AboveTopSecret.com, the board home, not the home page, but the board home, there's a little tab up there above where the flagged and the ATS mix radio franchise shows are posted. But there's one that says stats. Okay? Stats. Now, the stats thing, I think, really is amazing because it tells you the number of posts and all the different traffic that we have. And it just really blows me away when I click on that. But there's one on the board home that I think kind of sets it all up. With all the members that we have, I mean, you have to understand that when records are set, they're set on a particular minute of a day. It's not like a whole day or whatever, but it's on the minute of the day. Now, when all this stuff was transpiring, now, we have like, what is it, John, 150,000 registered members, I think, something like that. I don't know.
If not more.
Yeah, give or take more. Who knows? You know, because a lot of people are lurkers, and you know they're so paranoid they don't want to put anything down. But
actually, I used to be one of those.
For
3 years.
Outside women's dorm, wasn't it?
What was that?
Wasn't it outside of the Colorado University women's dorm? Was that where you were lurking?
Right.
Yeah, you were coming all the way from California to Colorado. Sure, that made sense, Dave.
Yeah, just to lurk.
Your last name's not Alexander, is it?
No.
Okay, very good. Most total registered members online all at once. Now, and this is one particular minute, and this is because of all this influx of thing, was 661. Now, that 661 maybe not sound like a lot, but when you stop and think of how many people go on and log off and whatever, to have it 661 during 1 minute, 2120 Greenwich Meantime, GMT, is pretty amazing. Now, this is what I think is really amazing. The following day, the 15th. Now, John, wasn't this supposed to happen on the 14th?
Yes.
If memory serves? Okay. So the day after this takes place, now keep in mind around the world, I mean, we're all in different kind of time zones and stuff. And we have, you know, obviously members from around the world. But at 23:30 GMT time, there were 4,548 members logged on at one time, which is a buttload. Now, this is what really, to me, really says a lot. We had 9,366 posts in one given minute at 1:40 GMT on the 15th of October.
Wow.
Now, that is a buttload of posts in 1 minute. Now, is that mind-boggling to you, John? I know it is. Got to be.
It is. It's mind-boggling. It truly is. Yes.
Well, I was going to tell you something even more mind-boggling than that. You ready for this number?
Yes.
You ready for this number?
Yes.
Number nine. What is that?
Well, that would be if you play the Beatles song backwards. When you played it backwards, the word or the sentence that says number nine, when you played it backwards, it would say, Paul is a dead man. Paul is a dead man. Paul is a dead man. In fact, I studied that in at a university. Not that particular thing, but that was one of the things that was brought up. Called backmasking on a record.
Right. Now, what do you think if we put this on audio, John, okay,
yes.
Numbers I just said, and you played them backwards, what do you think 9,366 would say?
Oh, geez. I have not a clue, Dave, but I'm sure you're going to share it with us.
Because of that Beatles scenario, I thought, maybe there's a sidebarred.
Oh, of course there
thing
is.
Thing, you know? Now, 661. Now, when you play that backwards, now, if you guys want to try this, download this MP3 of this show and run it backwards. But
oh, yes.
661 says howdy doody when you play it backwards.
Oh, boy.
The number 4,548 says, how's your sister?
Uh-huh. Yes.
Now, I thought that was amazing. That was really, because we always say that. Now, the number 9,366, if you play it backwards, John, guess what it says?
I give up.
Pass the bush beans, if you please.
Wow, that is simply amazing.
I think maybe somebody's been playing the numbers game. You know how we reviewed the 23 scenario. Now, if you add all those numbers up, guess what they end with?
It's the Dave show, so go
it's
for it,
23.
Dave.
It's scary as hell.
23. It's 23.
Okay. Well, John, that's all I got.
Well, here's a Kleenex, buddy. And ladies and gentlemen.
Let's wipe that one clean.
Here you go. Here's your Canadian and U.S. UFO sightings.
I love those guys.
This is ATS Mix.
What? Whoa, what am I hearing?
What is this?
From above, topsecret.com.
Ah, crap!
Here are your anomalous sightings.
From around the world.
This is Tamriel from Godbox Cafe with sightings from across Canada. The following reports were recently submitted to UFOinfo.com. In Cobourg, Ontario, a husband and wife were strolling on the boardwalk at around 7:30 p.m., and while looking out onto the horizon, they both saw a bright, large light, which they concluded couldn't have been a star. It was static at about 10 o'clock and 1 foot from the horizon in the evening sky. The couple pointed it out to two more people who were camping in the nearby trailer park, and after about 1 minute, the light simply went out. Meanwhile, in our nation's capital, at approximately 4 p.m., a witness was at work and, while talking on the phone, looked northeast through the window towards the canal in the Gatineau Hills to see an object moving from south to north. The witness noted that it was not shaped like a plane and was in fact triangular and of a very reflective metal. It crossed the witness's path of vision at a cruising speed before disappearing out of view. Moving west to Beauséjour, Manitoba, three witnesses spotted 6 to 8 round orange objects moving across the sky from east to west and then northwards at approximately 8:30 p.m. No noise was heard, and the flight paths were described as erratic, with some of the objects stopping or slowing down. And at 12:38 a.m. in Elliott Lake, Ontario, formerly a uranium mining town, one witness posted seeing, for a second time, what at first was thought to be a star close to the treetops, within view of a mountain range from the witness's apartment building. The witness observed the object for at least 3 minutes and noticed that it radiated an aura of colors. Having turned away to wake a roommate, the witness reconsidered and looked back outside, only to find the object completely gone. This is Tamriel from Godbox Cafe, keeping my eyes to the skies for AboveTopSecret.com.
These are the reported sightings over the United States. This is David C.
From New Jersey, a viewer stated, I was on the terrace of my apartment building at 6:30 this evening when I noticed what I thought was a jet plane flying. Then it started to change shape somewhat. Whatever this was became malleable. At this time, I knew it couldn't possibly be a jet. No jet I know of bends and contorts. I noticed black circular objects trailing the larger boomerang. These circular objects were also black, maybe numbering 3 or 4. The boomerang object hovered for a few seconds over my building. Before it, and the circular objects trailing it, continued in a northeastern direction. As the objects left my view, additional circular objects rose from the southwest. There was no boomerang, just 4 circular objects. They too moved in a northeastern fashion. I telephoned the West New York, New Jersey police at 6:36 p.m. and told them that I was not crazy, but there were some very strange objects flying overhead. The desk person said he'd take my name, and if anyone else reported it, he could reference it. Just as we were speaking, additional circular objects rose again from the southwest. I told him what I was seeing, and he said to get a camera. I yelled for my roommate to get my camera. I took a picture, but the black circles were too far in the distance, and they did not follow the same flight plan. They moved north, not northeast, so I did not, unfortunately, get them on camera. In New Mexico, an observer stated, I witnessed a brightly illuminated blue object in the sky. It was just right there, motionless, or so it seemed to the naked eye, not too much higher than our tallest building of around 12 floors. It was unlike anything I have ever seen. The object seemed to slowly move closer, then stop. At first, the shape was round and bright blue in color. We took pictures. It changed color to a solid orange-red, then began changing shapes. Pear-shaped, round, oblong, oval, as well as changing to being outlined in orange and red. I made sure I was propped against the car to steady my arms as we were looking through our binoculars and discussing everything we were seeing. The object made erratic darting movements, causing me to constantly have to refind and refocus it. After about 5 to 10 minutes, it slowly began drifting up at about a 70-degree angle. As it got higher, it again changed color back to the brilliant blue, only outlined this time. By the time it was almost out of sight, past the stars, it was barely even light outside. This is David C. reporting for AboveTopSecret.com.
I tell you, I still am just reeling from the amount of fun.
You're off kilter.
I really am. It's kind of like the guy that has 1 foot 2 inches shorter than the other foot, and he's kind of poking around trying to figure out where he's going. Have no clue what that means.
Fits you to a T.
It does fit me to a T. But you know, one of the things that I really most enjoyed about the 2008 Barry UFO Expo that we attended for the second year in a row,
yeah,
with the Sprinknator, was some of the guest lecturers that they had that I had always wanted to A, meet, and B, get a chance to listen to. And you know what's really a shame, John?
I give up.
That those of the members of AboveTopSecret.com and the guest that we have worldwide that were not able to attend that with us, really missed out on some just amazing lectures and points of view by these people.
Well, you know,
but
I just wanted to add that, yeah? Because of the magic that you and I can piece together here at the ATS Mix, we can almost let those people experience what you and I experienced there at the Bay Area UFO Expo. Would you not say that?
Well, in other words, what you're saying is that we can give them front row seats,
yes,
in front of lecturers,
yes,
that they may never have an opportunity to ever sit and listen to them firsthand. Is that what you're saying, John?
Probably not in those words, but that's pretty much the idea that is being conveyed. Yes.
Well, you know, may I offer a suggestion, John?
What would prevent you from
nothing?
Who could stop you? Yes.
Not a damn thing, John.
Yes.
But may I offer you a suggestion?
All right.
I don't know why. I guess it's just because I've picked up some of the analytics that you've passed on to me over the year. I actually recorded about 7 different lecturers that were there at the Bay Area UFO Expo.
Did you know that, John?
No, actually, it is so. You know what would be fun, John?
What would that be?
Is to allow our members to go into the rooms of these guest lecturers and let them experience what you and I experienced at the Bay Area UFO Expo. What do you think about that?
I like it. Did you have somebody in mind that you wanted to possibly start off with?
Yes, I do, as a matter of fact. Our old friend, George Knapp. Mm-hmm. You know, not only was George just a tremendous person and friend to you, that you got a chance to meet George first at the MUFON scenario.
Correct.
But I got a chance to meet George this time, and not only did we have a chance to meet, we had dinner together, and we also experienced your amazing UFO footage from Gilliland's Ranch that George took time out of his busy schedule to come and listen and watch, and was so, amazed at what you had captured, John, that he mentioned this on Coast to Coast, which we mentioned in the intro. Wouldn't it be amazing if we had like a lecture series, John?
Wow, where, now there's a concept.
That you like that?
I like
where
that.
Where we don't, it's not like an interview thing, but we take the member into seven top-notch people that were lecturers at the Bay Area UFO Expo and let them for themselves hear in their own words, without interruption, without question, what they talked about to the literally thousands of people that did attend. I'd like to say that we're going to start this lecture series with our old friend George Knapp, but somewhere in the next several weeks, we're going to feature a different lecturer. And some of the ones that we're going to be featuring are Clifford Stone, David Icke, Jordan Maxwell, Robert O. Dean, your old friend and my new friend, Ruben Uriarte, and Whitley Strieber. Now, boy, talk about some amazing lectures that they're going to get a chance to listen to as if they're right there with us, John.
It is going to be a fun ride for our members and listeners alike, because as you said before, it'll be just like they have comped front row seats.
All right. Well, let's don't keep them in suspense any longer, John. Let's let them listen to the absolutely always entertaining and amazing George Knapp.
Yeah. Would you like to start applauding with me now?
I'm applauding as we speak.
Pleasure to be back in the Bay Area. I was here like 2 months ago. Actually, I'll use any excuse. I like it up here. I used to live here. I grew up here. I taught debate at a little school called UC Berkeley many years ago. Here in the East Bay, I love it. So I'll use any excuse. I mean, I do more bar mitzvahs, christenings. I mow lawns. I'll take a loofah to your back in the shower if you want to pay my way up here. You know, things are kind of tough in my hometown. I think you heard from John Alexander earlier this morning. He lives, as I do, in Las Vegas, and it's tough. I mean, normally, when times are good, people like to gamble and have fun. When times are bad, people like to gamble and have fun. But we're feeling the recession sort of like the rest of the country. So I'm kind of, gambling is down, visitors are down, hotel room occupancy is down, town's kind of hurting. So I'm just kind of hoping that maybe we could have a bailout. I'm figuring about $700 billion would about do it. And so toward the end of the conversation here, I'll pass a hat and you can trust me to take it back. I want to begin by talking about a UFO case, one that is completely unrelated to the Skinwalker Ranch, which we'll get into in a couple of minutes, and all the weird stuff that's unfolded there. But I think it'll help get us into the general topic and the theme of what I want to discuss with you this afternoon, and that is sort of perceptions, how we perceive, how we are perceived, how all kinds of strange, unrelated stuff might actually fit together in some sort of a big picture. This is a case I've been working on for a couple of months now. Some of the initial investigation and interviewing of the key witnesses was conducted by a friend of ours, Linda Howe, does a lot of great work, and she put it on her website and talked about it on Coast to Coast Radio. And I know that our colleagues from the UFO Hunters, which I think they're here, Bill Burns and crew, are hot on the trail of this as well, and I'm sort of in between those guys. The case I'm talking about is the Needles UFO crash. And I suppose I should say alleged UFO crash. And if you don't know much about it, allow me to bring you up to speed. Witnesses say they saw something streak out of the sky coming from the northeast toward the southwest on the morning, about 3 o'clock in the morning on May 14th. And this thing came out of the sky and crash landed about 100 yards off the Colorado River south of Needles, California. This is an area where three states sort of meet down there. This one witness, one key witness, who was on a houseboat at the time, says that he saw it hit, he heard the noise, and then within a couple of minutes, all these helicopters showed up, and they swooped around, and one of the helicopters was a giant sky crane. It picked this thing up, this big glowing object, and hauled it away with all little smaller helicopters following it. And then the next day, within a matter of hours, all kinds of weird people and vehicles started showing up in the town of Needles and other little areas down there. Call them men in black, not the alien kind of men in black, but the military kind of men in black. I mean, people with military haircuts driving really strange vehicles and asking questions and seemingly surveying people in relationship to this event. I produced a story about it. It aired on television. It hit YouTube. It had 100,000 views in a couple of days. It's up now 200,000, something like that. And it sort of spawned its own mythology. I want to play the story for you, and then we'll talk about it, and I'll tell you how I think it fits into the general theme I'm trying to develop. If you'll roll the disc, number one. Somewhere in this rough terrain, just west of the Colorado River and south of Needles, is a point of impact, maybe some burn marks, created by something that fell from the sky. Frank Costigan saw it because he got up at 3 in the morning to let his cat out, a fiery object that flashed across the sky. But it wasn't a meteor, he says.
Up in the sky, it was just bright. It was bright enough that it illuminated the ground.
For 7 years, Costigan worked as the chief of airport security at LAX. He says the mystery object flew out of the northeast, heading southwest, traveling very fast. But at one point, it slowed down, then sped up again.
And it went behind the hill, and I waited to see if I could hear it crash, because as big as it was bound to make noise.
But he didn't hear a crash.
I was coming into work.
Hours later, David Hayes, the owner of KTOX Radio in Needles, was coming to work when he spotted an odd formation of dark vehicles driving off the highway. He drew a picture of the lead vehicle, a large truck with a dome on top and a black structure that reminded him of a stealth fighter.
It seemed like it was some kind of surveillance vehicle, but four-wheel drive. And it had government plates, U.S. government plates on it. And behind it was a couple of vans that were, they looked like support vehicles.
The men inside had military bearings, Hayes said, but weren't in uniform. He made eye contact with one of the drivers, and the guy followed him. Later in the day, one of the vehicles was parked outside his station, seemingly conducting a surveillance of the place.
You see these guys, and they're staring you down. It's sort of a men in black sort of a feel to it.
Absolutely. Very serious heart, serious as a heart attack.
I went up to the airport.
Coincidentally, Costigan, the ex-cop, works on investigations for Hayes. When he came into the radio station, he told Hayes about the thing he'd seen in the sky, and Hayes told him about the men in black. Then they got another piece of the puzzle, a call from a man who lives in a houseboat on the river who said he saw the fiery object, that it had crashed about 100 yards west of the river, that it landed with a thump. Hayes says he's known the witness for years by the name Bob on the River. Bob thought a plane had crashed and tried to call 911, but his cell wouldn't work, so he moved his boat out into the river and then heard the helicopters. In an interview with journalist Linda Howe, Bob says he saw at least five helicopters flying in formation, including a large sky crane. The crane picked up the oval-shaped object, still glowing, and flew away, heading in the direction of Las Vegas. One odd detail, the choppers arrived only 17 minutes after the object crashed. Bob described it to Hayes.
About the size of a, he said it was like a, the size of a semi-trailer, about like an oblong shape. And like a tank, something like that.
There's got to be something, some evidence on the ground.
Out of the blue, the people at the station got a call from a friend in Laughlin who said the Laughlin Airport had been inundated on the night of the crash with so-called Janet planes. That's the airline that flies workers to top-secret Area 51. Costigan says the airport could not confirm this because no one's on duty after 6 p.m. at night, not even in the tower. The black vehicles have left Needles. Bob, the houseboat guy, can't be found either.
The fact that there were people here the next day, almost like a team, it seemed like that they were doing either some sort of cleanup or whatever. The point is that something definitely happened.
Couple of developments. After the story comes out,
the naysayers, the debunker types, they start complaining about the witnesses. They look at the video, they figure, well, look, that Frank Costigan guy's got a big gut. He must be a boozer. And they looked at Dave Hayes, who owns the radio station, and they figure, well, he's whacked out. Did you see the mohawk and the weird earrings and jewelry? And, you know, that's what you face in this kind of appeal. Of course, David Hayes is a front man in a band. That's why he looks as he is. And he's a rebel, and he's a successful businessman, and I found him to be a really honest guy. Frank Costigan doesn't drink at all. I mean, he was the chief of police for LAX for 7 years. He had 250 men under him at the airport, or 250 personnel. Incredible guy who just didn't want to live in LA anymore and moved out to Needles. You know, but it's easy to make those kind of characterizations. As for Houseboat Bob, that's my name for him, I mean, he disappeared. He was gone for a couple of weeks. And after the story aired. And so there was a lot of speculation about what happened to him. We would call. I went down there looking for him. Costigan went looking for him. We had the phone number. He wouldn't answer it. Well, you know, that gives rise to all kinds of speculation, too. Maybe the men in black came and grabbed him, or something bad happened to him. Well, the fact is that, you know, there are a guy who lives on a houseboat on a river might have all kinds of reasons for not wanting to draw a lot of attention to himself. Maybe it's just his nature. He doesn't want attention. He's shy. Or there could be reasons you don't want to run into the government or talk to people from the government. Anyway, we found Houseboat Bob, went back down and found him and interviewed him. And then just last Tuesday, we went out on the river and floated around up and down, went looking for the spot where this thing came down, and we think we found it. I've got some video of that stuff as well. I'll show it later. I don't want to get too far sidetracked, but we'll get into it later in the other session this afternoon. The other part that was interesting was the men in black. We went looking for them, and we found all kinds of other witnesses who came forward who had bits and pieces of this story, people who had seen these vehicles coming in and out of Needles, Lake Havasu, Laughlin, all that area down there. So I thought, well, you know, what the heck, give it a try. I'm supposed to be an investigative reporter. We'll go down there. So we went down a couple of times just looking around, found people who and interviewed them who'd seen them. We found people and interviewed them who'd seen the helicopters flying in formation. And then we're on our way back to Las Vegas. And I'm reading the newspaper, and my photographer, Matt, is driving, and zoom, one of these things comes by. Did you see that? I said, no, what was that? Bam, here comes another one. Big, strange vehicles, government plates. So we hooked a Huey. I fired up the camera, the video camera that we had inside the vehicle, a smaller one, and we caught up to him and chased him for a while. And I got behind him and shot the plates, and then we got up on side of him and shot into the vehicle. They're just like Dave Hayes described them. I mean, they got all kinds of antennas and stuff coming out of them, and no markings at all. You can see through the blacked out windows, the crew cuts, shades on these guys. So we follow the first one, then we caught up to follow the second one, caught up to the first one. We're going in and out of traffic. These guys are talking on the radio. Obviously, they know what's up. They don't know who we are. The news vehicle, because I'm an I-team guy, the news vehicle is not marked. Pretty soon these guys, they head toward Laughlin. They pull over at a weigh station, two of the vehicles, and we pull over right behind them, jump out, and we're Matt shooting video of them, and they're sitting there with their engines running. It's kind of like, you know, who's going to draw first kind of a thing. As we're standing there, boom, 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 three more of them go by. What the hell are these guys up to? Who are these people? Pretty soon, we're sitting there for a couple of minutes, sort of a standoff, and one of the vehicles, the lead vehicle, the big one, about the size of a satellite live truck, a TV live truck, comes up right beside us, sits there for a second, nobody gets out, and then it goes a little bit further. So there's one down there, there's one here, we're in the middle, and somebody gets out. And this guy is crew cut, civilian clothes, sunglasses, packet heat. Gets out and says, get off the side of the road, we're going to need you to see your ID. I said, I'm going to need to see your ID. And he says, I'm a federal agent. I said, well, show me. So he flips out a badge, and sure enough, it looks like the real thing, and he flips it back real quick, and I said, I didn't get to see that. You're going to have to show it to me again, and he flipped it out again, and it identifies himself as being part of this particular agency that I don't mean to tease you too much, but it's not anything I'd ever heard of before. He takes my ID. I tell him we're a TV station. That's why we're following you guys. We're chasing this story about men in black. He said, I don't want to talk about that. I'm appealing to you as patriotic Americans not to interfere with us or our shipment. Your shipment. What shipment would that be? I'm not at liberty to say, sir. He's back off the side of the road, takes down all this information. I'm thinking to myself, okay, by the time I get back to Las Vegas,
every tax form I have ever filled out will be audited, you know? I told the guy that actually I work with the Defense Department, do a lot of stuff at the test site, Department of Energy, which these guys generally are affiliated with. And we do a lot of stories at the Nevada test site, atomic stuff and everything, and I'm sure we could work something out with you. He says, well, we'll get back to you on that. And they did. They flew a guy out to meet with us a couple days later and to give sort of a off-the-record debriefing about who they are and what they do. And, man, it is a fascinating story. And I hate to tease you like this, but I'm going to use this for a series that we're doing as a follow-up to the needle stuff on KLAS. That'll air in early November. These guys, I have never heard of them before. They do look like men in black. They have a really important national security job, and they have allowed us to follow them around, hang out with them. We went to some training programs. There's never been a news story about them, ever. There is some information you can find on the web, but it's not much. So anyway, I'm really looking forward to bringing that out into the public. But I don't think that these guys had anything to do with the needles incident. I think they just happened to be going through there for other reasons. Now, I do believe that there's somebody like them that's down there poking around, because we interviewed a couple of people who'd encountered him face-to-face and been quizzed by him. There was a lady who appeared on the radio show with these guys at KTOX who was there when Bob on the River first called in. And she was there, and later she has a little Democratic Party meeting in Needles, a couple of her friends and fellow party members, and one of these guys shows up, and he pretends like he wants to join the party, but he doesn't want to ask about Obama or tax policies or anything. He wants to ask about Bob on the River. Were you there when the call came in? What did he say? What was said off the air? That kind of stuff. And it was really weird, and so the lady has agreed to do an interview with me as well, and it's a fascinating little mystery. And I hate to get too far off the subject of Skinwalker Ranch, but you know this story is interesting on several levels, and it's interesting without any exaggerations. I mean, it's interesting even if the thing that crashed wasn't a UFO in the ET sort of a sense, and that's my belief. I personally suspect that what this thing was like a UAV, some kind of advanced weapons system that we don't know about, maybe a piece of space debris, a piece of a satellite, something like that, because that would explain why these helicopters were there so quickly, that they knew it was coming down or tracking it or trying to get to it before anybody else saw it. That's my belief at this point. I don't know. I don't have enough information, but it's fun to work on this stuff. Colonel Alexander, I interviewed him for our story as well, who spoke here earlier. He's sort of the same opinion. However, it is a UFO in the strictest sense. It's unidentified. It was flying. It is an object. Unidentified. We don't know what it was. That has not stopped the usual crowd from putting out a bunch of crap about it. You know, I told you about the YouTube, 100,000 hits, and then it went to 200,000, something like that. And people just can't help themselves about wanting to get in on the action on this stuff. Within days of this thing appearing on the web, the fur starts flying. It was an alien craft from a particular planet shot down by our government. So saith the, I think they called it the Cosmic Federation or something like that. The word goes out on the internet that word has been sent through this ET emissary from the planet Meepzorp or something like that to a couple of UFO researchers. And so now we know, you know, the real story. So, you know, there were other similar stories, but you get my drift. And this is the kind of UFO incident that someone like me can sink his teeth into, or folks like yourself, researchers. There are witnesses to interview. There's a paper trail. You can call certain agencies. You can try to verify information about who really was in the area at the time. Investigative reporting, something you can do. It doesn't need the exaggeration and fiction and nonsense. You know, the mystery we're all involved with, the unanswered questions that each of us here are here today to ask, are big and important, and it's tough enough for something as straightforward as this needles incident. It's made even tougher when we allow ourselves to be sidetracked and swayed or duped by goofy crapola foisted on us by publicity hounds or profit mongers or certifiable nutballs who infest this subject. You know, to an extent, it's up to all people like us to sort of do some self-policing when this kind of crap pops up. The subject isn't just about flying saucers or something that crashed on the Colorado River or lights in the sky. It looks like it's a lot bigger than that. And the answers, ultimately, I think, could tell us a lot about who we are and why we're here and where we fit into the big picture. And I do mean big picture. Jacques Vallée, Dr. Vallée, who lives here in the Bay Area, one of the most important guys to ever study this topic. I remember interviewing him, 18 or so years ago, and he told me, I'm going to really be disappointed if it turns out that the answer to the UFO mystery is people in spaceships coming from other planets. Because it seems so much bigger than that, so much more wondrous. The evidence suggested to him that it was a much bigger and more complicated mystery than that. Whitley Strieber, who spoke here this morning, it was 19 years ago, I think this month, that I interviewed him, the first time I ever talked to the guy, and it was fascinating then as now. And, you know, he said that the unanswered questions that we're all facing, he talked about the so-called UFO cover-up. And he said that while our government probably has not been really forthcoming about UFO secrets, and we all believe that to be the case, certainly have not been honest about it, that the visitors themselves are the true architects of the secrecy and the cover-up, because they only let us see little bits and pieces. They decide when and where and who and how much. And that's exactly what has manifested itself at this place called, that I call Skinwalker Ranch. You know, there's no way I can cover all the strange stuff that's happened there in 45 minutes or even in a couple of hours. So I'm going to pick out a few things that we can talk about. Later today, I think I'll get into some of the more important events in greater detail. In a nutshell, as Ruben said in the introduction, this ranch is one of, if not the strangest places on Earth. It represents, as he mentioned, perhaps the place that has had more intense scientific scrutiny over a long term than any single paranormal hotspot ever, at least outside of the government, and they don't tell us what they're doing. The scientists from NIDS, that's the National Institute for Discovery Science, John Alexander, who you heard from earlier today, was part of that team. They were there day after day, night after night, month after month for 7 years. They documented more than 100 bizarre incidents, witnessed many of these things with their own eyes, examined evidence, interviewed scores of other witnesses who lived in the area for a very long time, and they collected a heck of a lot of information. It pains them to admit it, and for me to admit it as well, but all that stuff that they collected, all those stories, what you would consider evidence, still does not constitute proof. Because, at least in a definitive sense, it is evidence. Evidence that something strange and wondrous is unfolding around us, that we are somehow all part of it. The ranch, as some of you know, has had its share of UFO-type events, as well as animal mutilations and trace cases and strange creatures and dimensional portals, poltergeist-type events, and a whole lot more. A whole lot of mind games, really, played out by some sort of a cosmic trickster messing with us. You know, the scientists didn't know then what it all means. They don't know now what it all means. We can guess, though, and I'll do some of that on their behalf, but that's all it is guesswork. And that seems to be how they, whoever they are, wants it. It's clear that those folks, those visitors, whatever you want to call them, are calling the shots. I'm going to allow Bob Bigelow to sort of set the stage in our further discussion of the ranch. Bob Bigelow founded NIDS, the National Institute for Discovery Science. He also founded Bigelow Aerospace. He's going to be my guest on Coast to Coast this Sunday if you guys are up late and want to tune in. He's one of the most fascinating guys I've ever met, and has probably put more money out of his own pocket into UFO and paranormal research than anyone in the world, any single individual. He bought the ranch. He went up there, talked to the rancher, found out all the weird stuff was going on, and he bought it, and then put his team up there on the ranch, and they studied it for 7 years. Here's sort of his take on it in the only interview that he's ever given about the ranch, if we can play the second disc.
The performances didn't repeat themselves. Each time there would be a performance of a sort, there was always some unique pattern. It was something that was always changed. So we would be prepared that if this type of event happened again, we know what to do. Well, that exact same event never happened again. It would always be something completely different. We were always outguessed. Every time we would come up with some method of observation or calibration that we were always outguessed as to what was going to, you know, how we were going. And so it became obvious that we obviously weren't the ones in control. We were along for the ride, and that a lot of these exhibitions were exhibitions for gamesmanship or instruction, you know, in that kind of context. The phenomena was playing with us and giving us only a taste here and there of various things, an opportunity to see things that were abnormal, opportunity to cause examinations upon performances of things that were very unique through certain pathological kinds of investigations. And those were opportunities that were very helpful. So in terms of witnessing things, we witnessed things both on camera and in person that we were privileged to witness, that we could have easily not had any opportunities. If the phenomenon did not want us to observe anything, then we wouldn't have observed anything.
I'm not going to have time to go through the whole thing, because so I'm going to jam. So buckle your seatbelts there, because we're going to cover some territory here. Northeastern corner of northeastern Utah, the Uinta Basin. It's a great big area. There's probably 25,000 people even today that live there. 90% of the people who live there are LDS, good, hardworking Mormon folks. The other 10% are Ute Indians. Their reservation was created by Abraham Lincoln way back when, and the Utes have basically been there ever since. This area, for some reason, for as long as anyone can remember, has been a hotspot for UFOs in particular, but a lot of other stuff as well, mutilations. It started at least 50 years ago. The Utes say this stuff had been going on much longer, maybe 15 generations in their reckoning. There are records that indicate that the Spanish explorers who came through there, the missionaries, had UFO-type events, and they recorded them in their logs. I don't know what it is. We've examined a lot of those possibilities in our book, A Hunt for the Skinwalker, but we don't really know what it is that would attract UFOs, flying saucers, orbs, discs, whatever. This whole entire area, you can't throw a rock without hitting someone who's seen a UFO or had their own encounter, or somebody in their family's had one of these encounters. And the epicenter in this entire weird sea of weirdness is this particular ranch. There's a guy named Dr. Frank Salisbury. He was from Utah State University. And back in the 1970s, he conducted a study and wrote a book called The Utah UFO Display. Sort of fits with what you just heard from Bob Bigelow about it being a performance. He sort of reached the same conclusion. He says, this looks like a display, that these things appear to people at different times for reasons that we can't quite fathom. But they're the ones called the shots. They let us see bits and pieces whenever they want to, and we just got to live with it and take what they can give us. Salisbury, by the way, I talked to him. He's still alive and well. J. Allen Hynek is the guy who wrote the foreword for that book. If you can find an old copy of it, it's out of print. It's really good. But it sort of was based on the work of a guy named Junior Hicks. He's a school teacher in that area. He's been there as a teacher, taught science for 50 years. And because it's a small community, small little towns in that area, basically everyone there knows him. All the kids grew up, they went through his classes, they grew up, and so when they would experience these weird things, they'd call Junior Hicks. So he accumulated massive files and studied, I guess he really pared it down to just the best cases, 400 or so of the very best. Daylight disc sightings, alien beings, I mean multiple witness UFO cases. It's a fascinating pile of information. We interviewed Junior Hicks. His files actually helped Dr. Salisbury, were the basis of the Salisbury book. He is still alive and well, and he's the guy that told us about the Skinwalker legend. According to Junior Hicks, we interviewed him on the ranch, and he said, well, you know, the Utes don't go here. I go, what? The Utes, they won't go on this property. It's right in the middle. It's surrounded by Ute reservation land, and the Utes don't go there. I said, well, why? He said, because it's in the path of the Skinwalker. And I didn't know what a skinwalker was. I know now. In the Native American lore and religion, a skinwalker is an evil shapeshifter, an evil being, a sorcerer who can assume animal form and animal powers. And I guess the only way you qualify to become a skinwalker is to kill someone in your family. Now, we might think this is quaint, some kind of Indian mythology, and we don't take it very seriously, but they take it real seriously. When we're trying to write the book and investigate this stuff, we go to the Navajo, to the Utes, to the Hopi, and none of them want to talk about it. Even Native American professors who teach at universities, Native American professors who looked at this stuff wouldn't answer questions because they figure that if you mention skinwalker, you invoke the name, you invite it to come into your life. The Ute Indians don't go on this property because they believe the Navajo, who were terribly abused by them back in the 1700s and 1800s, put a curse on them, that they basically sicked a skinwalker. Now, when we wrote a book called Hunt for the Skinwalker, we're not looking for skinwalkers. We're looking for all the other stuff that was going on there. I think the Utes used the term skinwalker as sort of a blanket explanation for all the craziness, all the weirdness, all the lights and bad magic that they had seen unfold at this property over the years. 480 acres, beautiful place, well-watered. This family that bought it in the mid-1990s, it was their dream come true. It had been vacant for 7 years prior. They had no idea all the stuff that had gone on there, but they noticed a couple of strange things when they moved in. They noticed that all the doors and windows and everything had locks on both sides, as if they were trying to keep something both out and in. There were great big stakes by the two doors to the house with big chains. They'd obviously had some kind of guard dogs, big dogs there to protect them. Strange things started happening. Now, I can tell the story about the wolf, but it takes too long. We'll get into that this afternoon if any of you could show up for that one, this bulletproof wolf. On the very first day they showed up on the property, this wolf shows up, grabs one of their calves. The father grabs a big axe and hits it. It has no effect on it. He grabs a handgun and shoots it three times. It does nothing, no blood, no anything. He gets a powerful hunting rifle, shoots it again. It drops the calf. He shoots it a fifth time, right in the chest. Big chunk of flesh and fur flies off this thing, and it just sits there looking at him. And then it slowly walks away and goes back out to the field where it came. Day one. He and his son go looking for this thing. They chase it through the brush, and then it's big, it's giant. It came up like its back was to the middle of this guy's chest. They didn't even think there were wolves in this area. They follow it through the brush. It's through the mud, down by a creek, following the tracks, and they had sunk in a couple of inches because this thing was big and heavy. And then they go out into this clearing, 30 yards in each direction. The tracks go right out the middle, and poof, they stop. As if this thing had either vanished or disappeared or was plucked from the sky or something like that. They go back to the house looking at each other, figuring they're going to just forget this thing ever happened. And they picked up the piece of flesh and fur that had come off the beast, and it smelled like rotten meat, like it had been out in the sun for a couple of weeks. If they had kept that chunk of flesh and fur, we might have had this mystery solved by now, but they didn't. They're not UFO researchers. They're not paranormal folks. They threw it away and hoped to forget it. Well, then things really started hitting the fan. There are many very dramatic incidents that happened to the NIDS guys and to this family, dangerous kinds of incidents, very dramatic. The things that always affect me the most, the stories that I heard, are the small things, the little things. Mom goes to poltergeist type stuff. Mom goes to town, she buys enough groceries for a couple of weeks, she comes home, they're all in the bag, she takes the stuff out of the bag, puts it in the cabinet, goes to the bathroom, comes back 2 minutes later, all the stuff's back out of the cabinets and in the bags again. Or she would take a shower in the mornings. She goes in the bathroom, she takes a towel and her brush and puts it on the cabinet, locks the door, takes the shower, gets out, they're both gone. Door still locked. Towel and the brush are gone. They find them later, like in the freezer or in the microwave. Things moving around by themselves. Dad's using a post hole digger, a heavy instrument, digging holes out in the range. He stops for a second, wipes his brow, takes a glass of water, doesn't move, looks around, the post hole digger's gone. He finds it 2 weeks later, 75 feet up a cottonwood tree. Stuff like that. They start seeing shadows at the window. They hear heavy footprints. They started seeing these shadow things at the windows. Then they started hearing heavy footprints inside the house, outside their bedroom door in the middle of the night. Then they'd wake up and they'd see these shadow things at the foot of their bed. They started hearing these disembodied voices, strange languages, walking outside at night, and these things are talking in some kind of weird language. Like it sounds like it's 10 feet above their head. And the rancher yells at them, and they stop for a second, and then the voices start up again, almost mocking them, laughing. They felt they were being watched all the time, constantly, second-guessed. There was an incident where, after their animals start disappearing, where they and they were really losing a lot financially, that they said to themselves, Mom and Dad, they're going to town. They see their four prized bulls. These are very expensive animals, 2,000 pounds each, giant, powerful, unruly, and not in very good mood. They're in the corral. Rancher goes by, and he says to his wife, you know, something happens to them, we're going under. We're in big trouble. We can't make it. They come back a half an hour later. All four of the bulls are gone, and they can't figure out where they went. I don't have the video with me here. I'll have it for later, but there was a metal trailer inside this corral, the main corral right by the ranch house. Only had one door. The door was was shut and wired shut with this thick wire, and the guy had used it as a storage shed. Well, he's looking around frantically, looking for these bulls, wondering, oh, my gosh, we'll have to leave. We'll have to sell the place. We'll have to leave. Where did they go? Who could have taken them? Were they rustled? And he just, on a whim, peeks up and looks in this little grate up at the top of this metal shed, and there's the bulls inside, all four of them, crammed together. You couldn't get one of them in there, let alone all four of them. And how you would do it without unlocking the door, that's another matter. He yells to his wife, says, honey, they're here. And when he makes that noise, the bulls like wake up like out of a trance and start kicking the hell out of this trailer and knock the wall out of it. That kind of stuff would happen. It would just mess with them. And the same thing happened with the NIDS guys years later. They saw the poltergeist type stuff. Then the weird things started happening to their animals. Then they started seeing all kinds of creatures, animals like you'd never seen before, red birds that looked like they'd be at home in the Amazon, powerful, heavily muscled, 250-pound, looked like a hyena, but with a big, bushy red tail like a fox, that was slashing at their horses when they came home. The rancher jumps out and chases it. This thing takes off and just poof, vanishes. They had an incident. The incident that led to the NIDS guys coming to the rescue, sort of, the rancher had these very powerful dogs, hunting dogs, country dogs, not afraid of anything. And by this point, these balls of light had been appearing, and he was telling this to the folks at NIDS and Mr. Bigelow, hey, maybe you guys could come down here and check this stuff out. He's on the phone to a friend of mine, and these three dogs, one of these blue balls of light, these orbs, is bouncing up and down, and the dogs are grabbing at it, and they're snapping at it, and their jaws, it's just staying out just a little bit out of the reach of their jaws, and it's drawing them out across this pasture where that wolf had been, drawing them across, and the rancher's watching it, and he says to this friend of mine, hey, I got to go, something's happening. Hangs up the phone, and right about that point, the dogs disappear from sight into the brush. And he hears the screams, and then silence. And the next morning, all he found was these three greasy spots, like these dogs had been just vaporized. And that's when he decided, I got to get my family the hell out of here. And that's when the NID folks came in. I'm sorry, but I guess that's about, I didn't even get close to scratching the surface on this one, but I guess we could take a couple of questions for a minute if you want. If you want to hear some more, I've got some video and interviews and stuff like that, and we'll be getting into it a little bit later. Yeah, Bob? You know, we've been asked about this, and it's one of the theories that we sort of explored in the book, is whether or not this could be government that did it. It's a two-part answer. One is there were military people who showed up at the ranch, and you'd see them once in a while in the periphery watching. Now, there's no military base within 150 miles. And on occasion, there would be helicopters that would fly over. But I think that part of it happened after the story started filtering out. The second part of the answer would be, could the military have been doing this? And I guess we would have to say, yeah, the answer could be yeah. Could they have pulled off, and I haven't even scratched the surface on all the phenomena that was witnessed there, but could they? Would they? Yeah, probably. Do some kind of a psychological experiment to mess with people's heads and how they would do it, some of this stuff, I don't know. Like this, the ball of light that drew those dogs out to be incinerated it's a little bit bigger than a softball, looked like it was made out of glass, and had this bubbling blue liquid inside. And, man, if we've got something that flies like that, that'd be pretty cool. And we'll get into this later, this particular, that color, they had white ones, red ones, blue ones, these blue meanies, could instill fear in people way out of whack. I mean, there was plenty to be scared of for these folks who were on the ranch, and we didn't get to much of it at all, but this would like bring them to their knees, somehow tapping into the fear centers in the brain. Again, if that's technology we have, I wish the heck we'd get it, use it over in Iraq or Afghanistan or something. So, yeah, I think there has been government interest in the place, and I think there's probably interest in it now, but I suspect they would be in the same spot that the NIDS guys were. What the hell is it? And how do you explain it? The problem is, after I wrote these couple of articles in 2002, and then Colm Kelleher and I wrote a book, and I didn't really intend to write a book about it. I wanted to do a documentary. That's my medium, you know, so we've been shooting stuff on it. And because I'd been hearing the stories from the NIDS guys for a lot of years, and it drove me crazy, but I couldn't say anything about it. And eventually I talked him into it. And the only reason I did is because the activity went sort of underground. It went away. And the reason, I think, is that the whole dynamic changed when the NIDS guys got there. They started studying. They were stalking it instead of it terrorizing the ranchers. And it didn't like being stalked. So it messed with them a little bit. It screwed up their equipment. It played mind games with the NIDS guys. There was one NIDS guy whose brain was essentially taken over. Another voice came out. But eventually it got tired of it and went away. And because of that, the study essentially went away as well. NIDS went away. Mr. Bigelow still owns the property. I think he hopes that one day that there will be a resurgence, that this thing hasn't gone away permanently, that it will come back, and there will be a chance to study it on a different level. But because of the interactive nature of this thing, you don't want people wandering around out there. A lot of folks would love to get on the property. I understand that. But, people show up, they're trespassers, they get drunk, they show up in the middle of the night, come up to the window of the house where the people live, take pictures and stuff like that, throw trash all over the place. So he's got security on the property, doesn't want anyone there, doesn't want anyone to get hurt. So the answer is no. But there are vantage points from which you can see this thing. If you want to know more, I'll be down the road here a little bit later. Thanks.
Of course, now, you know, Dave, as you well know, but our members and listeners don't, George offered a workshop later on where he went into a great bit more of detail on all the subjects that he was talking about, which included, of course, the incident at Needles with the object that was witnessed by Houseboat Bob, and then, of course, all the high strangeness that happened around that. You know, what blew me away is when he started following when George Knapp and his camera guy in their KLAS TV vehicle started following those government vehicles, and then pulling over, and then the guys in black.
Yeah, and he says, and George says, "Let me see your ID," you know, and he doesn't really recognize what it is. And I tell you what's really neat. I hope he does this, and I'm sure he will. I mean, George never says anything he's going to do and not pursue it. But you know, I really can't wait to hear what his investigation turns out about who these clowns were. You know,
yeah. And then, of course, for me, getting to hear more about the high strangeness that happened out there at the Skinwalker Ranch, because I don't know if I have publicly or verbally said this, but our preliminary investigation that we did at the James Gilliland Ranch, I am leaning more and more towards the idea that the things that we not only captured visually and audibly, and there is also another incident that I have not shared with anybody yet. Well, you know about it, and I think Springer knows about it. But I had an incident that happened that literally scared the patootie out of me, and I don't know if I feel comfortable enough yet to share that with everybody. I'm going to think about that a little bit more. But getting back to the high strangeness, I am so interested in trying to find out if there is a correlation with what I am now leaning towards to thinking that this is more paranormal things that happened out there at Gillilands versus strictly just UFOs and aliens, and there being a correlation with what was going on there at the Skinwalker Ranch.
And I don't mean to interrupt you, but I mean, you know, and here again, this is obviously going to be your decision to make, John, if you decide to, you know, talk about or not talk about. And obviously, Springer and I are definitely going to respect your position on that. But I'm telling you, I told you, and I'm not going to say anything that would open the can of worms, so to speak, but I told you immediately when we talked about what we're not talking about what my take on it was, that I really thought it was weird-o-rama, you know. And I know everybody says, well, Dave thinks everything's weird-o-rama. Yeah, I do, but I'm telling you, when you hear it from your partner of over a year, that really freaked me out, John. I don't know when I've been so freaked by what you told me.
Yeah. I will share this tidbit, which is every night, except, though there were a couple of nights that I did not do this, but every night that we were out capturing stuff there on the Gilliland Ranch, I would later take off, mostly during the evening, which or early morning, which would be like 12:30, 1 a.m. in the morning, and get in my SUV or go out in the woods, and I would do Johnny's thoughts on what had happened during that day. And right. I did the same on this event that we're not really talking about.
Right.
And I was so overwhelmed with what had happened that it probably – I had to try recording this about 6-7 times because right. I got so overwhelmed with emotions that I couldn't continue. So if I ever do share that with the public – one, they're going to think I'm a lunatic because of the event and the subject matter, for that matter. And two, I will probably be wanting to share your rabbit hole to go hide in, Dave.
But you know, John, I tell you, and of course, here again, we can't talk about it. If they ever get an opportunity just to see you in that private moment thought video, I think it's going to hit a nerve with literally millions of our fans. And now the reason why I think it'll hit a nerve is, I think, John, you know, I tell you, someone told me today. Now, you know, we talked about it in the intro of this show. We talked about the vulnerability that I show by doing some of these threads and stuff, especially about religion and the universe and those kind of things. But I think if people ever get an opportunity to see this, John, they're going to see the intenseness that you approach every single thing in your life. And that's what makes me respect you the way I do. Yeah, I know we want to kill each other half the time, but the other half of the time, you know, I am so overwhelmed at your dedication. You never leave an I undotted, a T uncrossed. You approach everything in a 110-mile-per-hour zone. You never think of yourself individually. It's always for the common good, the better good, the whole site interest rather than your own personal needs for self-gratification or self-indulgence. And that's the thing I would really hope that they get an opportunity to see you at your most vulnerable, because to me, that's what makes you the person you are to me personally. And I would love to share that part of you with those that seek truth in their life. And I think that is something that can only be, what's the word, can only be fantasized about in most people's lives, but they would actually get a chance to actually see that if that ever comes to play. So sorry for the promotion of something that we can't talk about.
By the way, if any of you are interested in continuing on and figuring out what the hell we're not talking about, might I encourage you to stop by AboveTopSecret.com. In the Aliens and UFOs forums, there are two threads that are posted up by our CEO, Springer. One is entitled AboveTopSecret.com and Robbie Williams Investigate UFOs at Gilliland Ranch. And then the second updated one is called ATS and Robbie Williams UFO Investigation Round 2 of Gilliland Videos. And in both of those threads, there are exclusive video and exclusive audio and also Johnny's thoughts that are posted there for you to look at, to scrutinize. Because, you know, the whole concept behind this preliminary investigation that we did was to see if there was any truth to a lot of the claims that we had heard from a lot of the people and members alike who had gone out there and said, hey, there's some high strangeness going on out there, and we caught a bunch of UFOs and stuff. So we saddled up the ATS investigative coach, and we went out there to see if indeed there was. And I have to say, I do think there is something going on there. Now, the investigation is still open, and we are still having a lot of the video and including the strange audio that George Knapp was really intrigued by being analyzed by outside third-party analysts. And, of course, when we get that information back, we are going to post it so that you folks can hear what they have to say.
you know, before we end this particular show, John, I want to remind everybody that right now in the ATS Mix guest area of AboveTopSecret.com, the members and guest and the anonymous posters out there have an opportunity to post questions to be submitted to a couple of very special guests that we have coming up. The first of which is Apollo 14 astronaut Dr. Edgar Mitchell, and right now has 63 replies. And they'll be able to go in there and post a question for Dr. Mitchell that we will read and acknowledge their ATS member name if they happen to be a member. Obviously, we don't acknowledge the anonymous ones by saying just anonymous. And then the other one is one that we posted a few days ago, and John said, well, you know, maybe we ought to post what he's about because maybe the name Nick, is it pronounced Bajish?
Or Bigish.
Bigish, all right, B-E-G-I-C-H, folks. We posted it up originally a few days ago, and it didn't really get any people clicking on it. And then John said,
well, he's an author of a book called Angels Don't Play This Harp.
Yeah, harp, and it's H-A-A-R-P. Now, ever since we put that up, John, I mean, there's been six replies. I've had several U2Us from people that, now that they know they connect the dots, are very excited about this interview that we have coming up with Nick. And both these interviews are coming up in the next couple of weeks. The HARP interview with Dr. Nick is coming up October 23rd is when we actually do the interview. And then that same week, Dr. Mitchell, Apollo 14 astronaut Dr. Edgar Mitchell, is on October 21st. So you've got plenty of time to go in there and post a question that you would like us to ask on your behalf of both of these outstanding gentlemen.
Could I add something to that? I would just like to add that. I'd just like to add that if you do not want to post it under your member's name, you can also feel free to do it anonymously. What Dave and I would both like to ask you to do, please, before posting your query, your question for any of our guests, not just these two, but any of them in the future, please look through the thread and the post prior to your posting to see if your question has already been asked. And if it has, well, then change it. Ask something else. The one thing that just drives Dave and I both kind of nuts is when we see, you know, that we've got five or six pages, which has 20 posts a piece per page on it, and 10 of them are the same damn question. And then you guys get mad at us because we didn't ask your particular question because 9 other people asked the same question. Get a clue, people. Huh? Get a clue. Sorry.
But, you know, I mean, that's what I love about the membership. The intelligent community of AboveTopSecret.com, they read instructions like nobody else, baby.
And with that,
until next time on the ATS Mix Show, I would be Dave Rabbit.
And I'm Johnny Anonymous. Thanks for joining us. We'll catch you next time on the ATS Mix.
ATS Mix from AboveTopSecret.com is over.
You've been listening to the ATS Mix with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous. If you have a comment, suggestion, an opposing view, or would like to participate in a future show of ATS Mix, please contact Dave or Johnny at www.abovetopsecret.com. The views expressed on ATS Mix do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of the Above Network, LLC, or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening. You may now reattach your tinfoil hat. We'll be right back.